Morning.
Morning.
Morning, Sunrise family. We are so happy to have you with us. Happy Sunday. It's beautiful weather here where I am in the DMV area, and hopefully it's a wonderful day where you are as well. I think any day that we wake up and we're able to get up is a powerful day. So welcome and happy Sunday again, as some of our other family members join us. So, welcome to our weekly Sunrise Project call. We are so happy that you are here. And as Kelly Joy, our founder, would say, she's not with us today, but we're here and we are in her stead today. We're so happy that you're here and hope that you find a moment of solace and peace as we share and learn from one another in a safe space that is filled with love, compassion, and mutual desire to heal our children, our families, and ourselves. I'm going to add to that our friends and our community. God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I love that serenity prayer. It's all about acceptance and surrender. Our guest today is a dear friend of mine. She's new to the Sunrise Project Sunday support call. She's not new to my life, and I love her dearly. She is a mental health and homeless advocate, a motivational speaker, a TV and radio contributor, and she's not only a survivor, as you'll hear more about her journey in a moment, she's thriving and she's beautiful inside and out. She is the founder and president of Be Easy. She is a breast cancer survivor, 33 years stronger. She has over 20 years of forging connections and creating alliances, 30 years of community outreach, over 16 years as an IT analyst, 12 years in marketing, event coordination, and social media branding, and 6 years in real estate lending and negotiating contracts. And that is important. I believe that you will hear more about her journey in just a moment because she's been able to create and build and love an amazing life after getting off to what I'm gonna call lovingly a rocky start. Her organization, Be Easy, encourages and educates the community about homelessness, as well as suicide prevention and mental health issues. Her greatest passion and commitment are to create a voice for those unable to speak about suicide and mental health. She believes that when human beings experience trauma or severe life stressors, it's not uncommon for their lives to unravel. In addition, she has organized various mental health sessions and workshops for men, women, and youth. Lisa has had firsthand experience with homelessness. Her mother had dementia and unfortunately was homeless for several years. Lisa was diligent in helping her mother, but learned the social work system and laws for the homeless and mental health issues in the process. In 2012, Lisa's son, who was 18 years old, died by suicide. That same year, she initiated a suicide prevention pilot program with T.C. Williams High School in Virginia with the assistance of the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. She has served on the board of directors for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention for 2 years. Back in 2013, Alexandria Public School Board incorporated suicide prevention into their student curriculum. She's a contributing author for two books, Project Semicolon, Your Story Is Not Over. I love that. A beautiful reminder of growth for her and others. The book is a collection of essays and photos from a suicide awareness organization that has helped millions. And she's also a contributor to Kevin Powell's writing workshop in 2020, The Year That Changed America, a testimony of resilience and loss, hurt and hope, of stories remembered and forgotten, of stories of politics and the political climate. It also talks about what's possible when so much seems impossible. Lisa developed a strong sense of commitment to homelessness, suicide prevention, and mental health. And this experience has given her a deep appreciation for how to improve the quality of life, saving one life at a time, one conversation at a time. She's currently living in the Washington, D.C. area, where she's a global IT consultant and in her spare time enjoys writing adventurous sports activities like skydiving and skylining. I want to hear more about that. And loves domestic and global travel. And we're so excited again, Lisa, to have you here on the Sunrise Project Sunday support call. Welcome, Lisa, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you for being here. I am Dr. Vicki Johnson. Again, for those of you that have joined us just now or while I was introducing our guest today, our founder and host, usually, Kelly Joy, is not here with us today, but she's here in spirit and may be able to chime in toward the end. But we're so grateful that each of you are here. And Lisa, we are grateful for you today as well. Like, welcome, 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 not just to this call today, but I am still enamored by the fact that you are still here, having not only survived, but thrived in so much. What a powerful journey you're on in your life. And my first question out the gate is just, how did you become so resilient?
I guess before everything happened in my life, I had started therapy 2004, and to basically as far as personal growth for myself, and I guess that probably was a set in stone, a buffer for me with what was to be, what was going to happen. I would say first, God is in my life. I love him. I place him in my life first. But there's times where, yeah, you have that cloud, you know, it's dark. And I had to always tell myself, Lisa, this is temporary. This is not permanent. Where it's happening right now, where I'm dealing with depression, where it, maybe I'm dealing with grieving, or I'm dealing with something that is traumatic, this is temporary. You'll come out of it. You know, because at times you'll have friends who are there for you, but sometimes you got to pull yourself up. You got to pull your boots up. And I had to learn how to cope with things I couldn't control.
How did self-care, like, where did you get your sense of self-care and I need to love myself through this trauma? Because that is not something that is natural, I'll say. When we're born, we learn to add layers. And then as we age and mature, now we're learning to remove those layers that life has placed on us. And being the caregiver for your mom, dealing with dementia and homelessness, while being a parent, I mean, you talk about no parent is a perfect parent. And we know that well here in this community. But watching your mom go through what she experienced, dementia and homelessness, you're caring for her.
Right.
And then you have your own son. Mm-hmm. Like, talk about how self-care, and where did you get those tools from?
I had to learn that I can't do everything in one day, or I had to take time to just be still. And I'll tell you, it's not easy, because we're conditioned to where we've got to get this done. We have to do this. You know, we work Monday through Friday. And then the weekend is spent catching up on errands, or whatever we have to do as far as to make sure the house is taken care of, bills are paid, or whatever. And I had to tell myself, Lisa, you can't do everything within a weekend or within 7 days. You got to take a break, because we are chipping away we are chipping ourselves away mentally and physically. It's just not a mental thing, but physically we're tearing ourselves apart sometimes when we're just toppling over everything. Layer, like you said, we layer everything to just deal with stuff. This is how we are. But I had to learn, I'm not going to accomplish and do everything in one day or within 2 days. I need to take a break. I need to just relax. I need to meditate. I need to read. I need to sleep. And especially when it came to being a caregiver and then being a mother, I could feel myself. I had a mental breakdown. Honestly, I did. I
Can
had
we talk about that for a minute? I want to talk about that for a minute because we here in this community are familiar with mental health challenges, issues, breakdowns, not only in our children, which is what brought us together, but within ourselves. I myself personally dealt with postpartum depression for 5 years. Like, I don't even remember my daughter as an infant. And full transparency and vulnerability, right? So, what did your mental breakdown look like as a daughter? Were you a parent at this time also while you
Yes.
were caring for your mom? So, I
And
want you to share just a little bit. Can you give us a peek into what that experience was like for you caring for your mom in her state of dementia and having a child that you had to take care of?
just imagining traveling 4 hours to go check on her because you know where she is, because you have resources that are helping you out as far as just to keep an eye on her because she is a senior citizen. And then you're only capable to do as much as you can because of her resilience as far as her wanting to be where she is. You cannot, as far as you can go. Then
You
come,
mean in terms of her homelessness?
yes, exactly.
Okay. I just want to clarifying
Right.
just for those who are listening.
And then going home feeling useless, just being hopeless, useless, because you feel like, hey, you had your mind was, this is my checklist of what I think I'm going to do, how I'm going to get to the next step to help her. And you only get to the first base. That's it. And you got to go home. And I remember getting ready for work on Monday, woke up. And my body was like someone had put something on me and I could not move. My son had to help me put on my clothes for work. He was asking me, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna be okay. I get to work and it's worse. I can't even move. And my coworkers can see it on my face. They're like, something's wrong. They wanted me to go to the emergency room. I was like, no, I'm not. Because I worked at Brockville, Maryland. So I was like, I'm not going. They was like, we want you to go to the emergency room. I went home to check on my son and tell him, hey, I'm going to the hospital. I'll be back. I just want to let you know where I am down the street at the hospital. They admitted me in. The following day, I had tests. They medicate me with medicine to basically relax me. The eye opener for me was two things. I'm in there taking a stress test with senior citizens, and I'm the only one, and I think I was probably late 30s, 40s, and everybody was staring at me. And I was like, what's going on? And I had one of the older people spoke up and said, what are you doing here? And I was like, getting a stress test. They was like, no, we're here for a stress test because of our age. What are you doing here? And I literally almost broke down and cried because I was like, it still wasn't resonating until the case manager comes in after the test and she said, you're too young to be here. She said, you have to be careful because you're next in line to have a cardiac arrest or a heart attack. And she was like, what's going on? And I'm bawling out crying, telling her what's happening. And this is just my mom's situation, but she also, I'm also a mother, single mother. I'm working and taking care of my child. I'm trying to provide. And she's like, you're not going to be here on this earth long enough to take care of anybody if you keep going the same route you're going. And she was like, you need, what is it that you need to do? And I had to reevaluate myself because I said, Lisa, you can't be everything and be everywhere for everybody. And I had to take time, even though I had a crisis, my mother, and then my son, you know, him going to school and everything. I had to take a little bit of time for myself because here it is. I might not be here if I keep going the same route. And I had to learn how to take care of myself. I had to learn how not just work, you know, exercising, taking walks, relaxing, but also make sure I eat right. And therapy, because I had to talk to somebody about what I was dealing with.
So let me interject here, because I'm trying to move us through this journey of yours, because it's so powerful to me, Lisa. I say to you all the time, you know, you are just so beautiful inside and out, and you are still everywhere. I'm sure you've learned how to manage the stress now. So you're caring for your mom, you have this mental breakdown, you get intervention, right? They kind of help you to pivot. And as we mentioned earlier, this is National Depression Awareness Month, as well as bullying awareness. And so you have this intervention, you pivot as it relates to your mom, understanding that you can only do what you can do. And then there's the distance and just her mental state, right? Now you're back, single mom, you're home. Can we talk about your son and how he was experiencing you experiencing your mom at this time, and, you know, leading up to his issues with depression? Were you aware that your son was
so
having challenges?
His challenges started, and let's back up, when he was small, dealing with, when we lived in Portsmouth, Virginia, it was a wonderful daycare that he went to, and it was a family daycare. It was my cousin's fiance. She was a school teacher, but she also incorporated a daycare. And so all those children learned so much at the age they were, kindergarten, learning how to write and everything, and learning how to basically get along with one another. When we moved to Northern Virginia, it's a whole different dynamics. And he had to learn how to be friends with people who he wanted to like him, but at the same time, it was just different from where he came from. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one stone that was set, because now you're dealing with people where you have to, what do you have to do to have somebody like you instead of people just liking you? And then moving along, me being a single parent, I left the door open for his dad to be a part of him, his life. His dad just being himself, you know, took his time to do whatever. But I also made sure as a mother to incorporate that he had a big brother from the big brother. He also had manhood rite of passage from the church. And also as far as I ensured that he had everything, a child that came from a dual family. So he went to summer camp. Like some kids, you know, he would go to summer camp during the summer. He had everything that he should have, but at the same time, understand being a single parent. And then when you only have one parent taking care of you, you still have that missing link. So that was a consistent for him, not having a father in his life. So moving along, he still had that same childhood like anybody else, but that depression starts chipping at you because you're also looking at what's different about me with the other kids that have a mom and a dad. Why can't I have my mom and my dad? And not saying we had to be together, but why couldn't his father be in his life? And I remember when his father did call and I never spoke negative about him. But that day, my son spoke negative about him because he was like, he act like he knows me and he hasn't spent not one time with me. And that's the light bulb came to me, because I was like, I didn't have to say anything. He saw it. And he went to church to talk to the elders about it. And the elders talked to me about it. And I think that was his pushing point, because he wanted to feel love from a man who was his father, and he didn't get that. At the same time, he's seeing me work, being the head of the household. And I guess to him, he's like, this is not fair, because my mom is taking care of me. She's trying to navigate to help my grandmother, and it's also affecting her health. So, you know, I don't blame him for him making the decision, because I did have him go through therapy. But sometimes, like my pastor said, sometimes they make an executive decision and their mind is made up. He was a big brother. He was a peacemaker for everybody. And he gave more of himself than most people would. And I'm sorry about to get teary eyed.
It's okay, Lisa. Hold on for a moment. I want everybody to take a breath. And I want to honor you and honor your son in this moment. What's his name?
Ian Alexander Daughtry.
Ian Alexander, right?
Yeah.
So we say his name.
Ooh.
In this space. Like I said, when I see you, you're always just so radiant and so committed to helping others navigate their mental health challenges, their issues with homelessness. So we're going to take a moment to honor you right now and to honor Ian Alexander, you know, for the great son that he still is, because he is driving or nudging or pushing you, right, to be who you are today. So it's okay. You don't have to apologize for being emotional. We're all here together as a community for this moment, right? There's no blueprint for this conversation. And I think it's important for us to hear your journey. Maybe it helps us to recognize things that we can do different, things that we can do better. It can help us to forgive ourselves and know that we're doing the best that we can as parents. That's why we're here. So no apology necessary. So you said it's been 12 years?
Yeah, it's been 12 years. But there's times, you know, I always wonder, what would he be doing right now?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a free bird. He was my wildflower child. I know we have parents, you know, us being parents, sometimes we want to be helicopters, but sometimes we got to let our children grow, find their way. And that's what I encouraged him to find his way. You know, he was a beautiful spirit. He was my child. He was mine. But at the same time, you know, when you find out what he did for his friends, his classmates, people that he engaged with, it's just like, what, he would have been some type of counselor or individual that will be giving a lot to the community right now. And it was a great loss for me. Great loss. But
can we talk about, Lisa, grief for a moment? And how you have transmuted, I'm going to say, you're still moving through it. And mm-hmm. I believe this is Vicky, that we never get over it. We learn to live with it, and we learn how to move through it.
Yes.
And you do that with such grace. Even your being here today is so grace-filled for us. How have you navigated your grief journey? What has that looked like for you?
First started off, my therapist was like, what are you going to do to help yourself? as far as for grieving, because grieving, you're going to grieve. It's nonstop. You're going to have your highs and lows. And I would say this, my girlfriend Cindy, who is a corporate event planner, she travels a lot. And she was like, hey, these are a list of cities or countries I'm going to piggyback off of me, you know? And I was gracious that I had a job where they understood, hey, she, you know, we need to give her some grace. I'm a hard worker, but at the same time, she needs some grace to grieve. And I've traveled and I've been traveling and traveling, and I love it because it's so therapeutic. I've, you know, been to different countries, been to different cities, but just to take that time, and that's part of my self-care regime. And work, you know, fitness and everything, but that was where it started at, along with also, you know, becoming a mental health advocate and helping those. I wanted my purpose to basically now what he was trying to do, the torch has been passed on to me to help others, to educate others, to provide awareness for others. So that's where
I think it's so I want to go here to where you shared that there was a lot of resonance with you and Regina King, right? And how your lives mirrored one another. So I'm gonna say divinely. It was so divinely. But can you share how that affected you? Like, how did her experience with her son, how did that mirror for you?
I've been an admirer of her since 227, but when just following her, and then it was so, our sons are that have the same name, Ian Alexander, and just as far as our relationship with our sons, and then we both have tattoos. I mean, her son has a tattoo, my son has a tattoo. But it was just, we married each other. And when unfortunately her son had died by suicide, it was so many of my friends that were reaching out to me. And it was like, as soon as I heard about her son, I thought about you, because we mirror each other as far as, you know, our relationship with our sons, how we care about them, how it, I mean, if you would see me and my son, we go to movies, we, you know, we were like kids at times, you know. He wanted to go shopping, he wanted me to go shopping with him because he needed my advice, you know, on certain things. It was just our closeness with each other. Now, mind you, we had growing pains, but at the same time, we had a closeness of a mother and child. And it just, I felt for her. I really, really felt for her, because I was like, I know how she feels right now, that lost her only child. And to now, you have to move forward and try to find your way through this. It was just, I couldn't even tell you how I was feeling at that time, because I was just so in shock that it happened to her. But to see how she is now, and see how she is resilient, and how she is dealing with grieving, I commend her so much. She is phenomenal. I mean, she's, what can you
And
say?
you're in spaces where I really do see you being able to have this conversation with her in person, face to face, because like I said earlier, you're everywhere at all. I mean, any women's empowerment events, there's Lisa. You had the opportunity to meet Kelly and Dee at Karen Austin Spectrum Circle Awards. Luncheon event. I just look up and I'm like, there's Lisa. Lisa is everywhere. And so the same year that Ian died by suicide, you started your suicide prevention program. Like you really just.
Like within weeks, because at his vigil, that's where I learned how he was being the big brother to others. And we had the vigil, instead of in the auditorium, we had the vigil outside. We formed a big circle. And I remember I had advised the students that those who wanted to get a hug from me or wanted to talk, I was there for them. And when I tell you that each other student has something to say about how he helped them, whether it was they're dealing with their image, where they're dealing with, they had a disagreement with the person and he brought them together to bring peace, where he just made them smile, where he was just there to comfort them. And some of them told me as far as what they were dealing with, the depression. And I was like, you know, he wasn't the only one. You here have a student body where kids are dealing with this every day. And like I always tell people, I say, when us as adults, we have bills, mortgage, rent, car payment, you know, and sometimes we don't know if we have money for the next month or we're about to get laid off or we're unemployed, or, you know, that intensity as far as stress that we deal with, they deal with the same stress as far as just being who they are. They're students, but yes, they have stress just like us. They are trying to deal with the future just like us. And I remember speaking to the principal and she just said, whatever you want to do, Ms. Daughtry. I just told her, I said, I can't just sit still and mourn and grieve knowing that there's other children that are dealing with depression. They're dealing with things that are trauma. And I remember we did our first workshop. And I remember a young man, it wasn't about him, it was about his mother. Because we identified the signs as far as someone dealing with depression. We were able to provide a resource for his mother. But it was just, if it wasn't for him, it was for somebody in his family. We made sure that not just the students, but family, administrative staff, the community was aware of, hey, we need to take care of ourselves. We need to reach out and check on people. And when we presented it to the school board, it was just for high school. When we presented the school board, as far as in the feedback that we received, they basically ensured that it's for the whole school system, not just for high school. They wanted it started from kindergarten to 12th grade. And I was in tears at the school board because, once again, I was emotional about it, not because of my son, because of all the kids that we were helping during the course. And I wanted to make sure we did not have another incident. But if we did, they were okay to say, I'm not okay, I need help. Because I think my son did try to talk about it, but at the same time, society shuts us down to not discuss as far as our emotions, what we're dealing with mentally. And I want, my focus is for people to just have open dialogue, not just at home, but at work, where you, I mean, even if you see a stranger on in the street, or just, we need to make it normal that we talk about mental health. It should not be, we should not be ashamed about talking about it at all.
You know, I was going to ask you what legacy you want to leave, and you just shared it. You know, Ian's legacy is that now those in the Alexandria, I believe, school system, Alexandria, Virginia school system, students and teachers, et cetera, now have access to resources, you know, because of Ian. And I think that is such a powerful, beautiful legacy.
I want to say this,
yeah,
for anybody in for your school, mental health is part of curriculum. It's on the curriculum. You have to request it for it to be taught, to be, have discussions about it. It should not, you shouldn't have to say, okay, we had an incident, now we have to take action. Take action as far as advising the school board, advising the school, hey, we need to have mental health as part of the curriculum. It's just, it's there. There's a curriculum list and mental health is part of it. So that's what I advise parents now. You know, we're going to have the dialogue at home, but we got to have the dialogue at school as well.
I want to go back just for a second, Lisa. I'm asking for, on behalf of parents who are listening today and who may listen to the replay, what was your communication like with Ian as a parent child? What was it like?
We were very open, and that's what I was stating, that he wanted to talk about something. I remember when I was driving, he said, "I want to talk to you about something." I was like, "Okay, you can talk about it." But I'm the type of parent that we could have any discussion, and I'm not judgmental about it. But I, once again, mental health is such a stigma, and people are always so quick to judge you about you talking about you're dealing with some type of mental health issue, that sometimes that's what make people ashamed. And I don't think he was ashamed to talk about it with me, but I think also he knew I would put on my cape and be like, let's fight, let's do it. And I think for him, he saw so much sacrifice that I made, not just for him, but for my mom. But I encourage parents to please let's be comfortable where our child can come to you and say, "Hey, today was not a good day." And you can sit down and have that discussion with them. And what I mean, not just have a basic discussion, just break it down. Have them say, "Okay," let them just provide you what happened prior to for you to feel this way, so that they can feel comfortable as far as not just having a conversation about mental health, but just talking to you. I mean, it's so hard for our kids to talk to their parents because they feel like they don't understand, or you're going to be negative about what I'm about to say to you. I know one of his best friends, Jericho, calls me mom, and he was like, when I Jericho is bipolar, but also he was dealing with some things. And I remember when he ran away, I put on my sweat clothes and everything looking for him. And my son knew exactly where he was, but he was like, "You didn't judge me. You basically cared enough for me to come look for me." I was like, "Because you're my son's best friend, but also I don't want anything to happen to you. And I want you to get the help that you need." And sometimes I think, overall, as a person, we need to stop judging people. Stop judging. Let's just.
No, I agree with everything you said. And I also hear, because it's helping me, this is why I'm kind of slowing down through here. It's also important for us as parents to not be afraid to be vulnerable with our children. Because I've heard you say a few times, Ian knew what you were managing with your mom, right? And he was concerned about you. He was also a source of encouragement and help and inspiration for his friends and fellow peers, et cetera, in his community. So I think it's important for us to be able, to show that at times. That's what I want to say. That he was able to identify, mom is going through something too. And and then I heard you say, and I put that cape on, right, with Jericho. And sometimes I think it's okay not to put the cape on.
But also, okay, somebody's on camera. Also, for me, I didn't want my child to step out and be an adult. I wanted him to remain him being a teenager. And so for that reason, I never wanted him to be involved where I needed him to assist me with my mother. I wanted him just to be there and to encourage his grandmother, for her to see a familiar face. But I never wanted him to take the responsibility of what I was doing. I wanted him to basically take care of himself as far as, "Hey, you got school, you got friends, but I'll manage this." And I think that was a stress point for him because he was seeing me doing so much. And like you said, I had to take, sometimes you got to take that cape off.
You do, because, in addition to the stressors they already have, right? then they are managing us, and we are so protective is the word. And we are doing, this is not an accusation at all. We're doing the best we can with what we have, with what we know. And so what I heard and what I just wanted to reframe is that it's okay sometimes to let our children know we don't have the answers. We're tired. We don't know. We need to get support so we can support you, because we want to appear to have it all together all the time, which creates stress, basically, which led to, your breakdown when you had it. So I just love your vulnerability and transparency with the journey. And this is why I think it's important for us to have real experiences that we get to hear and get a peek into, because we're not alone. And when we're in that role, when we're in that space, which is why Kelly created this community, it feels like, oh my God, nobody could ever understand what I'm going through, only to find there is a community of people, mothers and fathers, who can relate to what you're going through, and you're not alone. And I think that's the power of what you have created with Be Easy. How did you come up with that name for your organization?
So I have a tattoo and it says "Be Easy," but that was my son's motto. He would always end talking to his friends and always telling them to be easy.
That's sweet.
And I think that was his way of, as anybody, saying, take care of yourself, don't be hard on yourself. Basically stuck with me because I was like, not just having his tattoo here, matching tattoos of turtles like he does. I have like multiple tattoos, but they have meanings now. But I wanted this here. And sometimes people will see my hand and they're like, oh, I tell them the story. And they're like sitting there and I'm like, they're looking at me like, oh my God, like, how can she just sit here and tell me this story now? And I'm just telling them, you got to be easy on yourself.
That's so powerful.
Self-care, if you're not okay, you're not okay. Let's not put this mask and say that I'm fine, I'm perfect. But then when you turn away or when you close the door, the mask comes off and you're still dealing with things that you haven't just said, hey, you know what? I need help. I need to get counseling. I need a support group. And sometimes it's just stop trying to take everything on at one time and believe in yourself. I think our children need to understand, believe in yourself. Your purpose in life is going to happen. I think as parents, we do put pressure on our kids to do things, to be academically, the best. But let them know, let them find out how they are the best, being the best. We need to be there to encourage them, but I think also we need to stop putting pressure on us, on our children as far as academically. They are going to do their best, but we don't need to put that much pressure on them. And I'll say this, I've been on the radio and I've heard people call in where a student is an A student and it still didn't matter because now that child is not here because they were overstressed, overwhelmed because they had to be perfect.
Lisa, can I tell you that Be Easy? My girl, that's making me emotional a little bit, and my emotion is layers deep. But I so love just the double entendre of it all, and that I think Jewel said that, your son gifted you your brand, your work, your purpose. Ended every conversation. What an admonition. Be easy. Right? So powerful. So powerful, especially when it comes to mental wellness. You can only do what you can do. Be easy about it. The turtle tattoo. This is so powerful. Listen, we have just about a few minutes left. So I want to open up for if anyone has questions, they want to share a frame, a word of encouragement or gratitude to you. We are so deeply grateful for your courage to just be easy in it all and show up. And there are lots of comments in the chat, but does anybody have any questions? You can unmute or type in the chat for our guest Lisa as we are winding down our time together today. Let me check in the chat. Yeah, Manaya said, your son gifted you your brand. That be easy is resonating with a lot of people. D says, believe in yourself. I appreciate and I'm grateful for you being here today. That's another comment. Much love and respect to you for sharing your experience with us. There are no blueprints for conversations, for these conversations. Phaedra, Ian had a heart of gold. My son Aaron really cared for him. That's Phaedra. Ian Alexander Daughtry is a wonderful son. Totally can relate. Just such a beautiful, just a beautiful card. Karen says, yes, that easy is all over me right now. That be easy is powerful. I'm gonna be thinking about that, all day. I usually say have a powerful day, but I might not take on be easy. You be easy about it. Are there any, what is going on with you in the future? Any plans? What's coming up for you?
So I'm drafting a short film. I'm almost done with it. I was actually reviewing it last night, so I'm trying to get it copyright. And then I've been writing for years. And I think when everything started happening, I couldn't write anymore. I want to thank Kevin Powell because Kevin got my mojo back. And now is I'm drafting, so I'm doing working on a short film, hopefully get that in development, and then also want to do a few books. So I'm making time out of my self-care to basically put my thoughts down, that's what I'm working on, and still continuing with the advocacy work. In a different dynamics. I have joined a few organizations as far as being a board member. They need someone from mental health aspects, so that's what I'm doing. And traveling, got to get back and travel. I stopped traveling with my mom when I finally got her in a nursing home. My last trip was the year before she transitioned. So I just said I wasn't going to travel anymore. I didn't want to go out the country or somewhere where I couldn't be close to her when the time come. And so now I'm getting back into traveling. So.
That's good. I think I saw someone come off mute. Is there a question? Just want to make space for a question or comment. There are some more comments in the chat. Lisa, you are a beautiful example of turning misery into ministry. Be easy. Heather says, I love that you said travel was your self-care. I never thought of it in that way, but believe it is for me as well. Manaya Jules wrote, I'm so emotional right now. Paul Lawrence Dunbar says, we wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile, with torn and bleeding hearts, we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. And honey, you done stripped us off today. Like, this is a reality check, and it's a beautiful, loving reality check that we're doing the best we can with what we have. And it's a hard journey to finally being able to move authentically in our journey. Michelle from New York says, I love it. And you know, Lisa, I love you. I'm so excited every time I see you with that beautiful smile. And we met because you invited me to come
Yes.
and share at a mental health workshop. And I had no idea of your journey at that point. And we've been, I'll say, stuck like Chuck ever since. That was years ago.
Yes.
I'm so honored to call you sister and call you friend. Are there any last words that you'd like to share with us before we close? And if anyone has any other comments that you want to put in the chat, or you can unmute and share with Lisa. But I just want to give you a moment to have last words before we close the call today.
I would say this. I know they designate September and partially October to mental health. For me, and I hope everybody will recognize mental health, it is 365 days, 24/7. We must continue to have a dialogue, not just with our inner circle, our family, but with our coworkers, with people in our community. I think we've taken a step back as far as caring. We're self-indulged. It's just sometimes I understand what's happening out there, but we as people have to be good to each other. We have to be kind to one another. And I think it's so difficult with things that can happen to us indirectly and directly, but mental health, and I would say the project 2025 affects mental health. So not gonna say anything, November the 5th, let's vote wisely. But our mental health is being affected also with this election. And the resources that we have now, we are limited. Just understand after November 5th, that we don't vote for the person who is voting to help us. It's a downfall as far as for all of us, as far as our insurance, as far as even getting the care that we need. I can't explain how important it is right now for us to really look at mental health and say, okay, this has to be a priority along with other things. It affects us, and everybody has mental health, dealing with mental health at different levels. So I don't want people to think, oh, I don't have a mental health problem. We all deal with depression, anxiety, stress, being overwhelmed. That's part of mental health.
Yep.
It's just not identifying being bipolar, schizophrenic, those titles that people want to call other people, deranged names. So let's continue to have this dialogue, not just online, but offline.
Look at you being an advocate. I love it. Being who you are, 365, 24/7.
And be easy.
Be easy. Leslie said, this is good for me. So glad that you're here. Our executive director, D Sapp, put in the chat as well that there is a new platform, new registration platform that we ask that you use to sign up for these calls. Please share the link, the Eventbrite link, the registration link. It's in the chat. It's also on all of our social media platforms. I'm saying this to everyone. Please follow us on social media at The Sunrise, SON,
Your
The
t-shirt.
Sunrise Project. We're on all platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Please follow us there. Please invite someone, another parent that you know would benefit from this conversation every Sunday from our community that we are building, that we are growing. Again, the registration link is an Eventbrite link. The link is in the chat. And we just look forward to growing, to healing, to spending time together online and, as Lisa said, offline. Lisa, thank you so much for just sharing your journey today here so courageously, so beautifully in that purple, fresh off a photo shoot this morning, early this morning, and making time to be here with us. Our website is thesunriseproject.org. That's SON, the SON rise, the sunrise project.org. Please visit. You can go back and listen to those previous replays. You can hear this replay. You can share Lisa's story. And by all means, my prayer today is not only the serenity prayer, it simply is the admonition of Ian Alexander Daughtry and now his mom's organization. Whatever you do in every moment, be easy, everybody. Be easy. Thank you, Lisa. We love you. We will see everyone again next Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, sharing is caring. Tell someone about this Sunday support call and about our Sisters Unfiltered and our Brothers Unfiltered session every third Wednesday for Sisters Unfiltered and every third Thursday for Brothers Unfiltered of every month. God bless you all. Have a powerful day, everyone, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, everybody.
Love you.
Thank you.
Thank you.